Oh man, who are my 80s children out there? These are the 80s songs, right? Right here, Sting. Do you guys know that like this was the biggest hit of 1983? Like this was the biggest hit. Sorry, younger people. So this is what we listened to back in. But to be fair, I was only in third grade. So
in the 90s, Tupac, you know, did a little remix of it, which I really liked too.
Okay.
So. Puff Daddy, thank you.
Get it right.
Got my rappers wrong.
I'm curious about this song because I really don't listen to it much anymore. But in 2019, it was recognized by the broadcast music industry, BMI, as being the most played song in radio history. Anybody know that?
Wow.
2019, the most played song. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
All right. What's that? Yeah, no wonder Sting has a castle. That's right.
But it's also a little bit of a creepy song.
It is. Really. Well, hold on. Because I want to know what these guys think of this song. I mean, Luke was already saying. What'd you say, Luke? Stalker Anthem. That's right. The Stalker Anthem. How many of you go, wait, what are you talking about? I like this song. Let's sing it. It's my karaoke song. Yeah, anybody? You know? Let it go. Yeah, that would be the follow-up. The question is with music, it's always, how does this song make you feel? Anybody say this song makes me feel creepy? Like, ooh, it gives me the, you know, yeah, a little bit, yeah. The words, absolutely.
Unless you apply it to your little kids.
Okay, yeah, little kids, they need to hear this song, right? And teenagers need to hear this song. Every move you make.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, most of the world, I think, doesn't think of. I mean, how does a song like this that could be called the Stalker Anthem, how does that become the most played song in radio history? That's sad, right? I mean, even Sting was interviewed by BBC Radio years ago, and he said this about the song. He said, I think the song is very, very sinister and ugly, and people have actually misinterpreted it as being a gentle little love song when it's quite the opposite.
Okay. He wrote it.
He wrote it. It's his song. He should know.
Shame on you, not us.
That's right.
Sting.
We just clearly missed the point of this song.
That's funny.
Now, what a great way to start the day's message, right, with that song. It's like, where is this going? What in the world could a song like this have to do with Songs of Summer, where we've looked at the songs? And I'm glad you've asked, because I'm sure you have. How many of us would say, we're fine being watched, you know? You like that creepy picture? I didn't even tell Amy I was throwing that one in.
Okay. That had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I'm looking. That's a creepy. I mean, and even as Americans, right, we value our freedom. We don't want anybody watching. We look at the UK with their millions of CCTV cameras all over their cities, and we go, not here. Not here. Now, granted, their crime rate's lower, but not here. You know, there are some benefits. But the idea of us being watched, of someone watching us, is unnerving. We don't want it because we've heard of stalkers and things like that. Yeah. But I think it gets to a deeper point, though, because not just being watched, but then I think we ask the question of how well are we really known? And do we even want to be known? Mm-hmm. Do we want to be known? I mean, sure, Amy and I sit up here.
I'm going to take this picture down. It's been up too long.
No, leave it up there. Just sit in the uncomfortableness. Amy and I love to sit in the tension. So, but I mean, Amy and I speak, Steve speaks, we're all up here sharing. And when we do, it's very common for us to share anecdotes and stories of our lives, you know, about our kids, about our marriages, about our job, previous jobs or whatever. But even then, when we let you in on our lives, we'll steer pretty cautious about that, right? I mean, we don't let people in on everything. Mm-hmm. We keep some things hidden, you know, some things that we'd prefer you not to know about us. Because even then, do we really want to be known? Do we really want to be known? I mean, what has social media done to us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, social media is essentially like letting people know a very specific
sterilized
version of you. Yeah.
We put out
not
this.
Known.
Yeah, not actually known, but it makes us feel like we're known, possibly. There's a side to us we don't share. I mean, even when you get married, we kind of have that honeymoon period of really getting known. I mean, you guys know what I'm saying, right? I mean, it's where it's like the first time they go to the bathroom with the door open and you're like, didn't need that.
Mm-hmm.
Close the door, you know, kind of thing.
Sorry, Matthew.
To be known can be scary. It can be challenging.
Yeah.
For a lot of different reasons. I mean, one of the reasons it could, you know, people, we always kind of sit in the back of our minds, if you really knew me, would you like me?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that fear of rejection kind of mm-hmm. always lingers below mm-hmm. the surface, doesn't it? So today we're going to turn our attention to a psalm where it's written by David, and he has to acknowledge that God, every move you make, every breath you take, could really be God's song towards us in the non-creepy, non-stalker way.
Mm-hmm.
But David acknowledges that God knows everything about him. He knows every breath, every move. Mm-hmm. But unlike us, who might look at that and push back against it, David finds comfort in it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he... and likes it. It's something he worships God for. So let's take a look at Psalm 139 as we dive into this. We're going to break this piece, this psalm up a little bit. Here we go. It says, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hands upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain." How's that make you feel? I mean, we see David's response, right? He says, "Oh my goodness, this knowledge is too wonderful." But do we think that? When we look at how God knows us, I mean, to be fair, Amy and I both were up here today together because both of us knew this psalm. We liked this psalm, and neither of us wanted the other one to have it by themselves.
Yeah.
So we're like, no, I'll
sit
there with you.
I want Psalm 139.
But how does this make, Amy, how does this make you feel, this first part?
In this season of my life, great. It makes me feel secure. I'm like, oh, I'm held, like, in the sight of God, in the presence of God, you know, behind, before. I love that no matter the direction I go, because I do go, you know, have those moments. And that idea of, like, being hemmed in or secure, there's something sweet about that.
Was there ever a time you think you might have felt differently about
that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, early 20s, get out of here. You know, I don't want to be in your sight. I want to run free, you know.
Yeah. Well, David clearly begins with this idea that God knows us.
Mm-hmm.
That God, he said, you know, God knows me. He says that he knows everything about me. And we're going to assume that as David writes this, this isn't something that's special that he gets by himself, that what he writes, we could also write by extension, that God doesn't just know David, but he also knows us.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, in fact, just what's interesting is if you look at the word translated know there in that passage, it occurs 7 times in the psalm. And what's interesting is it goes beyond just knowledge. Now, we think of know as knowledge. I know facts. I know figures. I know dates. I know this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is the word used here is relational. It's a relationship word. In fact, we're going to get uncomfortable for just a moment. It's the same word used in Genesis chapter 4 to describe the intimacy between Adam and Eve that led to the birth of a child, if you know what I mean by
that. Kind of know.
Wow, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome, Liz.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, knowing in a biblical sense.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's just terrified that I just did that little thing, just so you know. She's like, oh my gosh, that's my dad. No, but it goes beyond this head knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've done a really good job with trying to keep God at arm's length with this way too. Because what became so important for us, I would say Reformation forward, definitely the Enlightenment forward, but was less about experiencing God and more about knowing God with head knowledge. Well, who is God?
Mm-hmm.
So let's create theology and let's dive into theology. And not that that's bad. Not that knowing these things is bad, but we kind of replaced that or replaced the relational aspect of knowing God and being known by God with, well, I know about him.
Mm-hmm.
And we assume that those two things are similar and equal, and they're not. I mean, even in this message, we're going to use some nice theological words along the way. So when we say God knows that he's all-knowing, there's a wonderful, fun little word called omniscient. God is omniscient. He is all-knowing. And his all-knowingness, you know, leads to that question I think I asked you in the beginning. Is that a good thing?
And it's interesting because, you know, we're talking about knowing God. We're kind of obsessed with that in knowledge and understanding and theology. But this text is him knowing us.
Yeah.
And are we willing and able to be known and to actually flip the script and be like, here's me, you know, know me deeply. Yeah.
It's that question
all of me.
I asked you, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because, yeah, right now you think, there's security in God knowing me. But, yeah, there are times in our life where we're like, no, that's a threat. I mean, even just look at the words that David uses to describe this knowing. He says, you know me. You perceive my thoughts. Does that make anybody here a little uncomfortable sometimes? Oh, me. You discern my movements. Uh-oh. Mm. You're familiar with all my ways. Mm. Nothing is hidden from God's knowledge. I mean, we have to acknowledge that even though this may sound nice on some level, there's a threat to us at some level as well. As I read this week, you know, we are content with having God near us, but probably not too near. Mm. You know, we want God to give us our personal space.
And I think it's, as I think about, you know, having worked with many of you and college students over the years and doing mental health stuff now, I'm like, maybe the deepest human longing is to be known, not just known, but known and loved.
Yeah.
And that's maybe where the tension comes in, because like you said, we're afraid if we're fully known and we have that longing met that we actually won't be loved, you know? It's not enough to be known. We need to be known and, like, accepted, known and loved for who we are.
Yeah.
And that's where the fear comes in. So we're like, well, I want to be known, but I'm just going to let you know all these beautiful little things about me, you know, like, again, the social media part. And I think that's part of why social media is so toxic for many people. It isn't for everybody, but for many people, because what happens is you put out what you want to be known for, which is not your real genuine self all the time, and then you only get affirmation for people knowing the beautiful parts about your life, the highlight reels, and you don't actually let people know your full self and love you and all your mess and all your, you know, unlovely pictures and things.
Yeah, and part of the problem with that is when we don't let people in to fully know us, when we keep people at arm's distance, we find that we sit and suffer. Mm-hmm. When we keep things in the dark, that's when things have a tendency to grow. Mm-hmm. That's when we have a tendency to suffer the most. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about, you know, the new moms, and we have new moms here. And being a new mother is incredibly challenging, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's difficult. Can I get an amen? I mean, I've never been a new mom, but I've seen a new mom, okay? Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is, even with social media, or even just when you show up at church, you see the parents and their kids are just so stinking well-behaved. I mean, seriously, Zane Clett, according to us, is a perfect angel. Now, his mother says it's not always like that.
I saw him cry a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, I didn't know.
But we see that, and then we sit here and go, well, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing something terrible. So we sit in that moment, and we don't let people in. Mm-hmm. We keep that hidden, and we don't do that. And so, therefore, I think to our detriment, we continue to suffer unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. And when we do become known, I mean, a new dad says, oh, I'm struggling with this. Mm-hmm. And they talk to an experienced dad and they go, yeah, so did I. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know,
you're
unique, just like everybody else, you know? I mean, that's kind of how it is. Mm-hmm. And so we have to kind of get over this, and we have to kind of see that even God knowing us and allowing God to know us is not a threat. But even the way David describes it, do you see some of the other language? He says, you know, you hem me in. Well, that sounds ominous, right? You lay your hand upon me. Well, is that in a good way? Mm. I mean, even to hem in can be like to lay siege to a city. Mm. It's the question we have to ask sometime, is that being known by God, do we see it as being seized or see it as being secured? Mm. And that's a big question, because I think how we perceive God's movement in that way will determine how we interact with God. It's certainly determined by the view of God. And as David says, He looks at this knowledge that God knows, and he says, you know, it could be translated this way. Your knowledge of me is beyond my comprehension. It is far beyond me. I'm unable to fathom it. And it's almost like there's a comfort there. He's okay with it, you know. But it even moves beyond that. So he begins this psalm, and he's just like, God knows me. He knows everything about me. He knows my deepest, darkest secrets, my craziest thoughts. He's there. He's got it. And then he keeps going. And then I think he has what I would call the natural reaction to God knowing us. Look at the, as he continues to write. He says, where can I go from your spirit? You see what he's doing here? He's like, all right, God knows me. Where can I hide? He says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light will become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. Mm-hmm. What's David wanting to do possibly here?
He wants to run away.
Run away.
Where there's an option of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David would be natural in that response. Because we see that in Scripture as well, don't we? I mean, Adam and Eve in the garden, in perfection, normally walking with God, they sin. God shows up. What do?
They
hide. Yeah. They run away. You know, what about Jonah? God says, go. What's Jonah's reaction?
Run away.
Get out of here. I refuse to do it. Could he get away from God's presence? Absolutely not. And even the disciples at the crucifixion, they scattered like mice off a sinking ship and left the women and John to deal with everything. Sometimes when we're confronted with our worstness, our reaction is to run and hide.
Yeah. You talked about being a new mom. I read a book to my kids over and over, both of them when they were really little, called Runaway Bunny. Anybody ever read it? So good. The whole premise is this, and I would tell them, I'm like, this is like God. He's always with you, you know. Now I'm like, that might have been a little creepy the way I talked about it. But the whole book is like, you know, this baby bunny is like, all right, I'm leaving home. Like, I need to get out of here. And, like, goes to all these different places. And the mom shows up, like, as something in the environment around the bunny, you know. Like, and then eventually the end of the book, the baby bunny is like, then I'm just going to go home. Like, if you're going to be with me everywhere, I might as well just be with you. And I love that. I'm like, that is our, we have a
There's
nature.
Theology in
yes,
the runaway bunny.
There is. It's everywhere. It's, I'm telling you. And there is something, even we feel that in our families and when we're known and those kinds of things, but there is that urge in us to, like, you know, to run away. Yeah. And then that resolution to be like, no, if you already know my thoughts, you already know me, if you already see me, if you're with me, I might as well stay here with you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and that gets us to another fun theological word, which is God's omnipresence, that he is ever present, that there is nowhere that we can go. I mean, David's almost highlighting the silliness of this idea that we could run away and we could hide from God. It's just silly. And I mean, if you look how the psalm describes it, his descriptions include up, down, east, west, hidden, darkness, light. Fill in the blank. Whatever, wherever you think you go, you can go to escape from God, you can't. And here's what's interesting, is the imagery that is used here is also the same imagery that's used in one of the prophets in the Old Testament. In Amos chapter 9, God is talking about bringing judgment on Israel. And he says, no one will get away. He says, though they dig down to the depths below, from there my hand will take them. Though they climb up to the heaven above, from there I will bring them down. Though they hide themselves on the top of Mount Carmel, there I will hunt them and seize them. I mean, that's the same language. That's the same imagery, but much differently interpreted, right?
Yes.
I mean, one commentary I read put it this way. It said, it can be extremely encouraging to know that we can never get beyond the realm of God's care for us. Yet there's another side to the significance of God's always being able to reach us anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
true,
right?
We should have had the song, One Way or Another.
Exactly.
I'm going to find you. I'm going to get you.
There's theology there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just like we had to ask with God's knowledge, we have to ask with God's presence. Mm-hmm. Do we find that to be comforting, or do we find that to be disturbing? Do we find it to be something that we want to push away against? And it really depends on how we view God. It depends on how we view our relationship with God. Do we see this as a good thing or a bad thing? Mm-hmm. And all how we perceive God is part of it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, as I was even reading this psalm multiple times this week, I think I was also struck by sometimes we're comfortable with one or the other. We love the vastness of God or we love the intimacy of God. You know, we love like, oh, he's capable. In this climate right now in our country, even we're like, God, we cannot manage this. You must, you know. Yeah. And it's so good to know the vastness of God, but then we get scared of that like intimacy of God. And I think that's something beautiful and incredible and so rare that there is our God is able to be omniscient, omnipresent, know all, be all, and also like he's right here with you, you know, and he's speaking to you. And we see this later on in the psalm as he gets into some more intimate language here, too.
Yeah, and even the Apostle Paul, I think, picks up on this theme in Romans chapter 8 when he says, what can separate us from the love of God? Not height, not depth, nor the present, nor the past, nor angels, nor demons, nor anything that is, you know, yet to come. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's, I think, if we are threatened by the ever-presentness of God, I think it should cause us a moment to pause and ask why. If we're threatened by the knowledge of God, why? What is it that David and Paul and these other people in Scripture see about God that they welcome this? That, yes, God, you know me, and that's an amazing thing. I can't run from you. I can't get away from your love, God, and that is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It's a great question. We're going to keep asking that through this passage because David continues in this really beautiful description of the Creator. Look at what he continues to write. He says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you." Isn't that beautiful? I mean, there's just kind of this incredible progression here. God knows. God's everywhere. And then we go to God's power. God has made us. God has created us. He has shaped us. He has formed us. And I think the psalmist here is talking about God's all-powerfulness. His omnipotence would be the nice theological word here. God's power in creating us. And there's a beauty there, you know, in how David considers how he's been created. You know, and even if we stop for just a moment and we begin to think about the intricacies of the human body. Now, David's not writing from a scientific perspective. He's not writing from with a microscope in front of him. But wow, what we have discovered since David wrote this.
Yeah, I was watching a TED talk the other day for a class, and it was this guy who's a mathematician, and he works for NASA, and I mean, he is brilliant, and he was, the whole TED talk was, well, for him giving all his credentials, you know, he's a, like the best problem solver. His whole job is to understand how all the intricacies of the world work, right? And this is his skill. But his whole TED talk was on the human body. And he was like, guess what? I can't wrap my mind around it. Mm-hmm. He's like, and my peers are the same way. You know, we can solve the most complex math problems. We can understand science in some of these vast ways, but he's like, the fact that a 9-month-old has, you know, 60,000 miles of ventricles, like, there's no, I can't problem solve, you know, like, I can't wrap my mind around that. That's like the, just how how do you say that word?
Intricate.
Yeah, intricately we're made. And you see, like, David, again, he doesn't understand all the science of that in the moment, but there's something that
you
he's
don't
like,
have to, do you?
No, like you created me. Look at me. Look what I can do. Look what my body does. Like you've created me.
Absolutely. And even beyond that, David says, it's not even just how we're made. It's that this God who knows you, who is ever present, He's not unconcerned about you. He's not some distant God. He has made you. He is a deeply personal God. He says, all my days are ordained before one of them came to be. Again, that can be very threatening, or that can be very comforting. You see, the problem with learning all this about God, his omniscience, his omnipotence, his the other one, you know, we can get lost in the theological if we're not careful. But if we do, we can miss the deeply personal and wonderful aspects of God. Because what the psalmist isn't doing is trying to lay out theory for us. He's laying out something deeply, deeply personal. And he's saying these truths about God will have a tremendous impact on your life. And even with this one, there's the question of, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Is this a threat or is this comforting? Another commentary I read said, the way we read this psalm reveals something to us about ourselves and God and invites us to ask why we read it the way we do and try maybe another reading. Now, I'd love it if this psalm ended right here. This would be good, right, Amy?
Yeah,
I mean, this would be.
But then this
gets tricky because David has a few more things to say. Take a look. If only you, God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Well, we took a little dark turn there, didn't we? Search me, God, and know my heart, and test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
I've been to a women's retreat, I think, where we did this passage, and there were just like ellipses, like little dots that left out verse 19 through 23, you know? Yeah. Yep. We're just going to skip over that.
I was reading this Thursday, and I texted Amy, and I said, you know what this part of the psalm reminds me of? I said, it reminds me of this right here. Take a look.
New Jersey, as you may know, there are many who consider the Miss United States pageant to be outdated and anti-feminist. What would you say to them?
Well, I would have to say I used to be one of them. And then I came here and I realized that these women are smart, terrific people who are just trying to make a difference in the world. And we become really good friends. I mean, I know we all secretly hope the other one will trip and fall on her face, but oh, wait a minute, I've already done that.
The good part right there,
it's a
right?
Great movie, yeah. Yeah. No, wait.
This experience has been one of the most rewarding and liberating experiences of my life. And if anyone tries to hurt one of my new friends, I would take them out. I would make them suffer.
Thank you, Kathy.
It's such a good movie.
That is exactly so what the psalmist is doing here, right?
Yes.
And I would hunt them down. Now, see, you're never going to read Psalm 139 this way again. You're always going to think Miss Congeniality when you get there. But this is what, I mean, this is how that psalm ends, and it hits me just that way. I mean, David has this beauty. Oh, my God, you're so beautiful. You're so amazing. You know me. You're wonderful. You're everywhere. You've knit me together. And then he closes with words like bloodthirsty, my adversaries. I have nothing but hatred for them, which leads us to this question. What do we do with this passage? What do we do with this part of the passage? We don't just put ellipsis there, right? and then ignore it. I think the question I have to ask is, what is David's motivation here? Is it anger or is it zeal? And is there a difference? And I think there is. I think David is not saying, I hate these people. I think he looks at the people in the world that aren't following God, that aren't worshiping God, and he says, how can they not worship you? These people have set themselves up against you, God. They are your enemies. You know what, God? I'm going to make your enemies my enemies. But then, even with this entire moment of, get them, God, he has this incredible moment of self-reflection. Yeah. Whew, but search me. Search me, God. Test my anxious thoughts. You see, I think that's the missing piece with a lot of what's happening in Christianity today in our culture, is the self-reflective piece. Mm-hmm. We love to pull out the beam in somebody else's eye or to point it out because that's easy. We love to have that type of zeal. Oh, I wish you were dead. We saw that last night, didn't we? Mm. We see that anger and that hatred playing out before us. Mm. But what David has here is this moment to go, hold on, God. But I want to make sure I'm not missing your beauty. Search me. Make sure I'm one of the ones in the camp of following you and worshiping you. Make sure I never lose the beauty and the wonder of you. And God, he says, help me to walk in your way. Help me to, you know, not get in my own way.
And this is a profoundly important question in these days. Even I thought that this morning as we were getting set up for this. Yeah. Like, search me, God, test me. Mm-hmm. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me to life everlasting. Yeah. And even just thought, wow, what a application for us today. Yeah. For many people, even far beyond this church, but that, what if we actually lived with that question, mm-hmm. even if that was a reflection that we asked daily, you know, search me, God, and know me.
Yeah.
Is there any offensive way in me? Lead me to the life everlasting.
Yeah, and I think that's how we close today. It's just kind of the question of what, how do we view God? How do we view this idea of God knowing everything about us, being everywhere we are, ordaining our days? And do we end with that idea of search me, God? When's the last time we asked that question? When's the last time we said, God, search me, test me, see if there be any offensive way in me? You see, in the culture right now, we don't like to do that. That's too, it's easier for me to look at you and go, but you've got this problem. It's like dealing with my seven-year-old at home. Mm-hmm. Go do this, Julian. Mm-hmm. But Jasmine doesn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, are we willing to do the hard work? You see, I think as we see these things unfolding before us in our world, these tragedies, this just chaos that's unfolding. I get our natural reaction is to, what'd you do? What if our first reaction is, search me, God. Test me. See if there be any offensive way in me and lead me in the way of life everlasting.
And that requires you being known.
Yeah.
You have to let God know you.
Yeah.
And other people too.
Yeah.
You know, we have to open ourselves up to being known so that God can search and reveal.
Absolutely. So that's where we're ending tonight, just there today, this search me. Mm-hmm. So as we wrap up, Amy, why don't you pray for us?
God, just in this moment, search us. Thank you that you know us. Whether we really are comfortable with it or not, you know us. You know us deeply, in and out. But there's an invitation here that we see in David, like his part of it, search me. So God, we too invite you to search us. Thank you that you know us, but we invite you to know us more. God, we want to be known. And we trust that we'll be loved in the midst. That's what you do. And so if there are those of us here who just have fear or hesitation or barriers to letting you know us or letting other people know us, God, would you be removing those? In your name, Jesus, giving us freedom to be known. known and loved, fully known and fully loved. And search us, God. We long to be known by you. We long to be like you. Thank you, Jesus.